Macmillan Audio presents The Lost Man by Jane Harper. Read for you by Stephen Shanahan.
Prologue. From above, from a distance, the marks in the dust formed a tight circle. The circle was far from perfect, with a distorted edge that grew thick, then thin and broke completely in places. It also wasn't empty. In the centre was a headstone, blasted smooth by a 100-year assault from sand, wind and sun. The headstone stood a metre tall and was still perfectly straight. It faced west, towards the desert, which was unusual out there. West was rarely anyone's first choice. The name of the man buried beneath had long since vanished, and the landmark was known to locals, all 65 of them plus 100,000 head of cattle, simply as the Stockman's Grave. That piece of land had never been a cemetery. The Stockman had been put into the ground where he had died, and in more than a century no one had joined him. If a visitor were to run their hands over the worn stone, a partial date could be detected in the indentations. A 1 and an 8 and a 9, maybe. 1890-something. Only three words were still visible. They had been carved lower down where they had better shelter from the elements. Or perhaps they'd been chiselled more deeply to start with. The message deemed more important than the man. They read, "Who went astray." Months, up to a year even, could slip away without a single visitor passing by, let alone stopping to read the faded inscription or squint west into the afternoon sun. Even the cattle didn't linger. The ground was typically sandy and sparse for 11 months of the year and hidden under murky floodwater for the rest. The cows preferred to wander north where the pickings were better and trees offered shade. So the grave stood mostly alone, next to a thin three-wire cattle fence. The fence stretched a dozen kilometres east to a road and a few hundred west to the desert, where the horizon was so flat it seemed possible to detect the curvature of the earth. It was a land of mirages, with a few tiny trees in the far distance shimmered and floated on non-existent lakes. There was a single homestead somewhere to the north of the fence and another to the south. Next-door neighbours, 3 hours apart. The road to the east was invisible from the grave itself, and road was a generous description. The wide dirt track could sit silent for days without being troubled by a vehicle. The track eventually led to the town of Ballymarra, a single street really, which catered loosely for a scattered population that could almost fit into one large room when gathered together. 1,500 kilometres further east lay Brisbane and the coast. At scheduled times during the year, the sky above the Stockman's Grave would vibrate with the roar of a helicopter. The pilots worked the land from the air, using noise and movement to herd cattle over distances the size of small European countries. For now, though, the sky loomed empty and large. Later, too late, a helicopter would fly over, deliberately low and slow. The pilot would spot the car first with its hot metal winking. The grave, some distance away, would draw his attention only by chance as he circled around and back in search of a suitable landing site. The pilot would not see the dust circle. It was the flash of blue material against the red ground that would catch his eye. A work shirt, unbuttoned and partially removed. The temperature the past few days had hit 45 degrees at the afternoon peak. The exposed skin was sun-cracked. Later, those on the ground would see the thick and thin marks in the dust and would fix their eyes on the distant horizon, trying not to think about how they had been made. The headstone threw a small shadow. It was the only shade in sight, and its blackness was slippery, swelling and shrinking as it ticked around like a sundial. The man had crawled, then dragged himself as it moved. He had squeezed into that shade, contorting his body into desperate shapes, kicking and scuffing the ground as fear and thirst took hold. He had a brief respite as night fell, before the sun rose and the terrible rotation started again. It didn't last as long on the second day, as the sun moved higher in the sky. The man had tried, though. He had chased the shade until he couldn't anymore. The circle in the dust fell just short of one full revolution, just short of 24 hours. And then, at last, the stockman finally had company, as the earth turned and the shadow moved on alone, and the man lay still in the center of a dusty grave under a monstrous sky. Chapter 1. Nathan Bright could see nothing, and then everything all at once. He had crested the rise, gripping the steering wheel as the off-road terrain tried to snatch control from his hands, and suddenly it was all there in front of him. Visible, but still miles away, giving him too many minutes to absorb the scene as it loomed larger. He glanced over at the passenger seat. "Don't look," he was tempted to say, but didn't bother. There was no point. The sight dragged the gaze. Still, he stopped the car further from the fence than he needed to. He pulled on the handbrake, leaving the engine and the air conditioner running. Both protested the Queensland December heat with discordant squeals. "Stay in the car," he said. "But..." Nathan slammed the door before he heard the rest. He walked to the fence line, pulled the top wires apart and climbed through from his side to his brother's. A four-wheel drive was parked near the stockman's grave, its own engine still running and its air conditioner also spinning full pelt, no doubt. Nathan cleared the fence as the driver's door opened and his youngest brother stepped out. "G'day," Bub called when Nathan was close enough to hear. "G'day." They met by the headstone. Nathan knew he would have to look down at some point. He delayed the moment by opening his mouth. "When did you..." He heard movement behind him and pointed.
"Oi! Stay in the bloody car!"
He had to shout to cover the distance, and it came out more harshly than he'd intended. He tried again.
"Stay in the car!"
Not much better, but at least his son listened.
"I forgot you had Xander with you," Bub said.
"Yeah." Nathan waited until the car door clicked shut. He could see Xander's outline through the windshield. At 16, more man than boy these days. He turned back to his brother, the one standing in front of him at least. Their third sibling, middle-born Cameron Bright, lay at their feet at the base of the headstone. He had been covered, thank God, by a faded tarp. Nathan tried again. "How long have you been here?" Bub thought for a moment, the way he often did before answering. His eyes were slightly hooded under the brim of his hat, and his words fell a fraction of a beat slower than average speaking pace.
"Since last night, just before dark."
"Uncle Harry's not coming?" Another beat, then a shake of the head. "Where is he? Back home with Mum?"
"And Ilse and the girls," Bub said. "He offered, but I said you were on your way."
"Probably better someone's with Mum. You have any trouble?" Nathan finally looked at the bundle at his feet. Something like that would draw out the scavengers.
"You mean dingoes?"
"Yeah, mate. Of course. What else? There wasn't a huge amount of choice out there."
"Had to take a couple of shots."
Bub scratched his collarbone, and Nathan could see the edge of the Western Star of his Southern Cross tattoo.
"But it was okay."
"Good. All right." Nathan recognised the familiar frustration that came with talking to Bub. He wished Cameron were there to smooth the waters and felt a sudden sharp jab of realisation under his ribs. He made himself take a deep breath, the air hot in his throat and lungs. This was difficult for everyone. Bub's eyes were red and his face unshaven and heavy with shock, as was Nathan's own, he imagined. They looked a bit, but not a lot, alike. The sibling relationship was clearer with Cameron in the middle, bridging the gap in more ways than one. Bub looked tired and, as always these days, older than Nathan remembered. With 12 years between them, Nathan still found himself faintly surprised to see his brother edging into his 30s rather than still in nappies. Nathan crouched beside the tarp. It was weather-bleached and had been tucked tight in places like a bedsheet. Have you looked?
Nah, I was told not to touch anything.
Nathan instantly disbelieved him. It was his tone, or perhaps the way the sheet lay at the top end. Sure enough, as he reached out, Bub made a noise in his throat.
Don't, Nate. It's not good.
Bub had never been good at lying. Nathan withdrew his hand and stood. What happened to him?
I don't know. Just what was said on the radio.
Yeah, I missed a lot of it. Nathan didn't quite meet Bub's eye.
Bub shifted. Thought you promised Mum you'd keep it on, mate.
Nathan didn't reply and Bub didn't push it. Nathan looked back across the fence to his own land. He could see Xander, restless, in the passenger seat. They'd spent the past week moving along the southern boundary, working by day, camping by night. They'd been on the brink of downing tools the previous evening when the air around had vibrated as a helicopter swooped overhead, a black bird against the indigo death throes of the day.
Why is he flying so late?
Xander had said, squinting upwards. Nathan hadn't answered. Night flying, a dangerous choice and an ominous sign. Something was wrong. They'd turned on the radio, but by then it was already too late. Nathan looked now at Bub. Look, I heard enough. Doesn't mean I understand it. Bub's unshaven jaw twitched. Join the club.
I don't know what happened, mate,
he said again. That's okay, tell me what you do know. Nathan tried to tone down his impatience. He'd spoken to Bub on the radio briefly the previous evening as dark fell, to say he would drive over at first light. He'd had 100 more questions but hadn't asked any of them. Not on an open frequency where anyone who wanted to listen could tune in. When did Cam head out from home? Nathan prompted when Bub seemed at a loss as to where to start.
Morning the day before yesterday, Harry said, around 8.
So Wednesday?
Yeah, I guess, but I didn't see him because I'd headed out myself on Tuesday.
Where to?
Check a couple of those water bores way up in the north paddock. Plan was for me to camp up there, then drive over to Lehman's Hill on Wednesday and meet Cam.
What for?
Fix the repeater mast.
Well, so Cam could fix it, Nathan thought. Bub would mostly have been there to pass the spanner, and for safety in numbers. Lehman's Hill was on the western edge of the property, a 4-hour drive from home. If the repeater mast was out in that area, so was long-range radio contact.
What went wrong?
Nathan said. Bub was staring at the tarp.
I got there late. We were supposed to meet at around 1, but I got stuck on the way. Didn't get to Lehman's till a couple hours later.
Nathan waited.
Cam wasn't there, Bub went on. Wondered if he'd been and gone, but the mast was still out, so I thought probably not. Tried the radio, but he never came into range, so I waited a bit, then headed towards the track, thinking I'd run into him.
But you didn't.
Nah. I kept trying the radio, but no sign of him.
Bub frowned.
Drove for about an hour, but I still hadn't made the track, so I had to stop. Getting dark, you know.
Under the brim of his hat, his eyes looked for reassurance, and Nathan nodded. Not much else you could do.
It was true.
The night was a perfect shroud of black out at Lehman's Hill. Driving in the dark, it was only a question of whether the car would crash into a rock or a cow or roll off the road. And then Nathan would have had two brothers covered by a tarp. But you were getting worried? Nathan said, although he could guess the answer. Bub shrugged.
Yeah, no, you know how it is.
Yeah, Nathan did. They lived in a land of extremes in more ways than one. People were either completely fine or very not. There was little middle ground, and Cam wasn't some tourist. He knew how to handle himself, and that meant he could well have been half an hour up the road, slowed down by the dark and out of range, but snug in his swag with a cool beer from the fridge in his boot. Or he might not.
No one was picking up the radio, Bub was saying. No one's ever bloody up there this time of year, and with the tower out...
He gave a grunt of frustration. So what'd you do?
Started driving in at dawn, but it still took ages before anyone picked up.
How long?
Oh, I don't know.
Bub hesitated.
Probably a half hour to get to the track, then another hour after that. Even then, it was only a couple of those idiot jackaroos over at Atherton. Took them bloody ages to get hold of the manager.
They always hired dickheads at Atherton, Nathan said, thinking of the neighbouring property to the northeast. It sprawled over an area the size of Sydney. It was, as he'd said, staffed by dickheads, but was still the best chance around there of connecting with anyone. So they raised the alarm?
Yeah, but by then...
Bub stopped. By then, no one had seen or heard from their brother for about 24 hours, Nathan calculated. The search was well into the urgent phase before it had even started. As per protocol, every surrounding property would be informed and it was all hands on deck for what it was worth. Over those distances, hands were few and far between and it could take a long time to reach the deck. The pilot spotted him.
Yeah,
Bub said.
Eventually.
Anyone you know?
No. Contractor based down near Adelaide, been working on Atherton for the season. Some cop got him on the flight comms, told him to do a flyover and check the roads.
Glenn?
No, someone else from police dispatch or something.
Right, Nathan said. He was lucky the pilot had seen Cameron at all. The Stockman's grave was 200 kilometres from Lehman's Hill and the main search area. When did he call it in?
Mid-Arvo, so most people hadn't even made it to Lehman's by then. It was pretty much only me and Harry out there still, but I was about an hour closer, so I said I'd drive over.
And Cam was definitely dead?
Well, that's what the pilot said. Had been for a few hours by the sound of it. Cops still got on the radio and made him do all these checks.
Bub grimaced.
I got in near sunset. The bloke had covered Cam over like he was told to, but he was pretty keen to get going. Didn't want to lose the light and get stuck here.
Fair enough, Nathan thought. He wouldn't have wanted to stay either. He felt bad that the task had fallen to Bub. If Cam was supposed to be meeting you at Lehman's Hill, what was he doing out here?
Don't know. Harry said he'd written in the planner that he was heading out to Lehman's.
Nothing else?
Not that Harry said.
Nathan thought about that planner. He knew where it was kept, next to the phone, inside the back door of the house that had once been their dad's and had then become Cameron's. Nathan had written in it himself plenty of times growing up. He'd also not written in it plenty of times when he'd forgotten or couldn't be bothered, or didn't want anyone to know where he was going, or couldn't find a pen. He could feel the heat bearing down on his neck and he looked at his watch. The digital numbers were covered in fine red dust and he wiped his thumb across them.
What time are they due?
They, meaning police and medical. They, also meaning two people. One of each, not a team. Not out there.
Not sure, they're on their way.
That didn't mean it would be soon, though. Nathan looked down at the tarp again. The marks in the dust. Did he look injured?
Don't think so. Not that I could see, just... hot and thirsty.
Bub's face was tilted down as he touched the edge of the dust circle with the toe of his boot. Neither brother mentioned it. They both knew what it meant. They'd seen similar patterns made by dying animals. A thought struck Nathan and he looked around.
Where's all his stuff? His hat's under the tarp. He didn't have anything else.
What, nothing?
Pilot said not. He was told to check, take some pics. Reckoned he couldn't see anything else.
But... Nathan scanned the ground again.
Not anything? Not even an empty water bottle? Don't think so. Did you have a proper look? You can see for yourself, mate. You got eyes. But... I don't know, all right? I don't have any answers. Stop asking me.
Yeah, okay. Nathan took a deep breath.
But I thought... the pilot found the car. He did. So where is it?
He didn't bother to hide his frustration now. Get more sense from the cows than from bloody Bub, as their dad used to say.
Near the road.
Nathan stared at him. Which road?
How many roads are there? Our one, this side of the boundary, a bit north of your cattle grid. Jesus, this was all on the radio, mate.
It can't be. That's 10 kilometres away.
8, I reckon, but yeah.
There was a long silence. The sun was high and the slice of shade thrown by the headstone had shrunk to almost nothing. So Cam left his car? Beneath Nathan's feet, the earth tilted very slightly on its axis. He saw the look on his younger brother's face and shook his head. Sorry, I know you don't know. It's just... He looked past his brother to where the horizon lay long and still. The only movement he could see was Bub's chest expanding in and out as he breathed. Have you been out to the car? Nathan said finally.
No.
Telling the truth this time, Nathan thought. He glanced over his shoulder. Xander was a dark shape hunched forward in his seat. Let's go. Chapter 2. It was 9 kilometres in the end. Nathan's own four-wheel drive was on the wrong side of the fence, so he'd climbed back through the wire and pulled open the passenger door. Xander had looked up, questions already forming on his lips. Nathan held up a hand. I'll tell you later. Come on. We're going to find Uncle Cam's car. Find it? Where is it? Xander frowned. His private schoolboy haircut was looking a little shaggy around the edges after the past week, and the stubble on his chin made him look older. Somewhere near the road. Bub's driving.
Sorry, all the way out at your road?
Yeah, apparently.
But what?
I don't know, mate. We'll see. Xander opened his mouth, then shut it again and climbed out of the four-wheel drive without further comment. The kid followed him through the fence, glancing once at the tarp and giving the grave a respectfully wide berth as he walked to Bub's car.
Hi, Bub. G'day, little mate. Not so little now, eh?
Nah, suppose not.
How's Brisbane?
Nathan saw his son pause. Better than here was clearly the answer.
It's fine, thank you, he settled for instead. I'm sorry about Cameron. Yeah, well, not your fault, mate.
Bub opened his car door.
Jump in.
Xander's eyes were on the grave.
Do we just...
What? Bub was already behind the wheel.
Leave him here like this? They said not to touch it.
Xander looked appalled.
I wasn't going to touch it. Him. I was just wondering if one of us should...
He faltered under Bub's blank gaze.
Never mind.
Nathan could see Xander's city softness exposed like a layer of new skin. His edges had been gently rounded by nuanced debate and foreign coffee and morning news. They had not been chipped away and sanded down to a hard callus. Xander thought before he spoke, and he weighed up the consequences of his actions before he did anything. Mostly, Nathan thought, that was no bad thing. But it depended where you were. Nathan opened the car door.
I think we'll be right, mate.
He climbed in. Let's get going. Xander didn't look convinced but got in the back without argument. Inside, the car was cool and dark. The radio lay silent in its cradle. Nathan looked over at his brother. You going to follow the fence line?
Yeah, reckon that'd be quickest.
Bub squinted in the rearview mirror at Xander.
Hold on back there. I'll do my best, but it's looking pretty bumpy.
Okay.
They drove without speaking as Bub focused on the ground in front of his wheels, wrestling control back from dips and hidden soft earth. The grave quickly disappeared in the rear window as they went over a rise, and Nathan saw Xander's grip tighten on the back seat. Nathan turned to stare out at the fence line separating his property from his brother's. The wire vanished into the distance in both directions. He could see no end. As they passed a section where the fence posts looked loose, Nathan made a mental note to mention it to Cam. He caught himself. Another sharp jolt of realization. Bub started to slow as they reached the edge of Cameron's land. The main road up ahead was hidden by a natural rise that ran along the eastern border of both Cameron's and Nathan's properties. On Nathan's side, it was mostly a dirt dune. On Cameron's, there was a rocky outcrop that had managed to weather a few thousand years. In the sunset, it glowed red, as though lit from within. At that moment, it was a dull brown.
Where's the car?
Nathan said. Bub had come almost to a halt and was peering through the windscreen. Xander twisted round, looking back the way they had come. Nothing out this side. Nathan squinted through the dusty glass. What exactly did the pilot say?
He was going off the GPS, so...
Bub shrugged. Not much help there. But he said somewhere on the rocks north of the grid. Bub changed gears.
I'll drive onto the road, see what we can see.
Bub kept close to the fence line, following the thin, unofficial track that linked paddock to road. He cut through a gap in the rocks, and with a jolt and a squeal from the engine, they found themselves on the other side of the outcrop. The unsealed road was deserted.
So north, you reckon?
Nathan said, and Bub nodded. The wheels whipped up a cloud of dust, and Nathan could hear the ping of stones chipping off the bodywork as they picked up speed. The road lay ahead like a dirty ribbon as the rock face loomed along their left side. In a few hours, it would block out the westerly sun. They drove for a minute, then Bub slowed in front of an almost invisible break in the outcrop. There were no signposts. The few locals knew most of the off-road tracks, and the occasional tourist was not encouraged to explore them. Bub turned the car into the gap between the high rocks and through to the paddock on the other side. From this vantage point, the outcrop was a gentle slope leading to the highest point before dropping sharply to the road. Bub stopped, the engine still running, and Nathan opened his door and stepped out. The wind had picked up, and he felt the grit cling to his skin and eyelashes. He turned in a slow, full circle. He could see rock and the fence, now small in the distance, and the horizon. Nothing else. He got back in. Try further up. They rejoined the road, and a few moments later, Bub pulled in again through a different gap. They repeated the procedure. Stop. Circle. Nothing but more of the same. Nathan was losing hope, and had opened the passenger door to climb back in when he heard a soft tapping on the window. Xander was pointing and saying something.
What's that?
Nathan leaned in.
Over there.
Xander was pointing up the slope back towards the road. In the light. Nathan could make out nothing as he squinted against the sun. He bent down, aligning his view with his son's. He followed his line of sight until at last he could see. On a distant outcrop on its rocky peak, there was the dull glint of dirty metal. The driver's door stood open, not thrown wide, and not just a crack, partway ajar, the perfect distance for a man to simply step out. After Xander had spotted the faraway sheen of the car, Bub had rejoined the road and driven them up to the next hidden track. He'd pulled in once again, and this time the Land Cruiser was impossible to miss. It was parked on the flat peak of the rocky slope, its nose facing the sheer drop to the road. By unspoken agreement, Bub parked at the bottom and they walked up. At the top, the three of them stood beside Cameron's car as the air current snatched at their clothes. Nathan walked around the four-wheel drive and for the second time that day felt something shift and tilt off centre. The exterior was completely unremarkable. It was dirty and stone-chipped, but he could see nothing wrong with it. He felt an unpleasant, cool prickle at the base of his neck. Nothing was wrong, and that in itself felt very wrong indeed. Nathan had expected, he realised, at the very least, to find the car bogged or rolled or smashed into a rock or crumpled into a jagged metal ball. He had expected hissing steam or leaking oil or flames or for the bonnet to be propped open or all four tyres to be deflated rubber sacks. Nathan wasn't sure what, but he'd expected something. Something more than this, at least. Something like an explanation. He crouched and checked the wheels. Four good tyres stood firm on solid rock. He opened the bonnet and ran his hands over the key components. Nothing out of place as far as he could see. Through the window, the gauges on the dashboard indicated both fuel tanks, primary and reserve, were full or close to. Nathan heard a sound and looked up to see Bub opening the rear doors of the Land Cruiser. He and Xander were both staring into the large haulage area with strange expressions on their faces. Nathan walked around and joined them. The vehicle was fully stocked. Liters of fresh water sloshed gently in sealed bottles next to cans filled with tuna and beans. A good collection. Enough to keep a man alive for a week or more. Nathan used one finger to open the mini-fridge that could be hooked up to the car's power. more filled water bottles were stacked inside, along with wrapped sandwiches now curling at the edges, and a six-pack of mid-strength beer. There was other stuff too. Extra fuel in a jerry can, two spare tyres strapped down, a shovel, a first aid kit, in short, the usual. Nathan knew he could have opened his own vehicle and found exactly the same. Bubs too, he guessed. A basic survival kit for life in the harshest climate in Australia. Don't leave home without it. His keys are here. Xander was peering into the open driver's door, and Nathan joined him. Side by side, their shoulders were the same height now, he noticed vaguely. A light coat of red dust had floated in and settled on every surface. Beneath the veneer, Nathan could see the keys clipped to a black lanyard, which was neatly coiled into a loop and placed on the car seat. That was a little unusual, a small voice whispered. Not so much leaving the keys in the car. Nathan didn't know anyone in the whole district who did anything else. He could picture his own keys now tossed into the footwell of his car back at the gravesite. Bubs were dangling from the indicator lever in the car at the bottom of the slope. Nathan couldn't remember ever in his life seeing Cameron remove car keys from a vehicle. He also couldn't remember ever seeing him coil and place them quite so precisely.
Maybe he broke down?
Bubs sounded unconvinced. Nathan didn't reply. He looked at those keys and all of a sudden, his hand was reaching out.
Dad, no, we shouldn't touch.
He ignored Xander, the movement of his arm sending delicate dust patterns swirling into the air. As his hand closed around the keys, Nathan knew with cold certainty what would happen next. He climbed into the seat, put the key in the ignition and turned it. The movement was smooth and the metal slid easily. He felt the vibrations as the engine started with a roar, then settled to a rumble. It sounded loud in the silence. Nathan shot a look at Xander, but his son wasn't watching him anymore. Instead, he was gazing beyond the car and into the distance. He was shielding his eyes and frowning. Nathan turned to look himself. Far away, a single tight cloud of dust was moving in the south. Someone was coming. Chapter 3. Nathan stood beside the stockman's grave for the second time that day and watched as the new vehicle approached. It slowed as it drew near. It was a four-wheel drive with industrial tyres and a bull bar at the front, the same as almost every other car in the area, but this one had a stretcher in the back. Reflective ambulance branding on the front and sides caught the sun. Nathan, Bub and Xander had remained on top of the outcrop next to Cameron's Land Cruiser until the dust haze from the south took shape. Then, wordlessly, they had walked down the rise and driven back to the gravesite to wait. For the first time all morning, Nathan felt a stirring of relief as the ambulance came to a stop and the nurse raised his hand. Some help at last. Steve Fitzgerald was a wiry man in his early 50s who occasionally shared stories of his tours with the Red Cross. He spent half his year in Afghanistan, Syria, Rwanda, wherever, and the other half on call in a single-staffed medical clinic in outback Ballymarra. He enjoyed a challenge, he'd once said, which struck Nathan as an understatement. Steve emerged from the ambulance with a police officer Nathan had never seen before. "Where's Glenn?" Nathan said immediately, and the cop frowned. Steve didn't answer straight away. He took in the grave and the tarp and shook his head. "Jesus, poor Cameron." He crouched down but didn't touch anything. "Glenn's been stuck out at Haddon Corner since yesterday. Got a family with young kids bogged their hire car in the sand but weren't sure where they were. He's found them now, but won't get out here till tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?
He's only got one pair of hands, mate."
"Shit."
It was true. Sergeant Glenn McKenna single-handedly policed an area the size of Victoria. Sometimes he was nearby, sometimes he wasn't, but at least he knew the lie of the land. Nathan eyeballed the new cop. He was already sunburned and looked barely older than Xander. "Where have they flown you in from?"
"St. Helens this morning. Sergeant Ludlow."
"You do your training up there?"
"No,"
Ludlow hesitated. "Brisbane."
"Christ, the city."
Nathan knew he was being rude, but he didn't care. "How long have you been at St. Helens for?"
"A month."
"Great." Nathan even heard Bub sigh this time. He looked at Steve, who was unpacking his medical kit.
"Maybe we should wait for Glenn to get back."
"You can wait out here as long as you like, fellas," Steve said, not unkindly. but Sergeant Ludlow and I are dealing with this now. Nathan met Bub's eye. No reaction.
Yeah, all right, he said.
Sorry, mate, it's not you, it's...
I understand,
Ludlow said. I'm afraid it was me or nothing. There was an awkward silence as the choice was considered.
But I'll obviously do my very best for your brother, he added.
Nathan suddenly felt like a bit of an asshole.
Yeah, right, thanks for coming all the way out.
Nathan saw a hint of relief in the guy's face and felt even worse. He introduced them all properly, then waited while the cop extracted a camera from his bag.
I'm going to...
Ludlow pointed at his lens and at the grave, and they all stood back while he prowled around, taking shots of the tarp and surroundings from every angle. Finally, after his knees and shirt were covered in dust, he stood up.
All yours,
he said to the nurse. Steve knelt by the grave and folded the edge of the tarp back in such a way that Nathan couldn't see underneath. He felt a flash of gratitude. Bub wandered away, leaning on the shady side of his car and looking at the ground, while the sergeant squinted at his digital photos. Nathan and Xander stood a short distance apart and watched the nurse work. Cam wouldn't have been too happy, Nathan caught himself thinking. Cameron and Steve Fitzgerald had never quite seen eye to eye. As though his ears were burning, Steve looked up at Nathan. How are you going these days, mate? Okay.
Yeah, things all right?
Other than this, obviously. Steve's voice was friendly, but his tone had a professional note. A question, not a pleasantry.
I'm fine. It's Bub who was here all night.
I know. Just haven't seen you in a while. Still not a pleasantry. You missed the appointment I made at the clinic.
I called.
Point was for you to come in, though.
Sorry,
Nathan shrugged. Been busy.
But you good?
Yeah, I said. Nathan gave Steve a look. Not in front of the kid. It was too late, and he caught Xander glance at him, then look away. After what seemed like a long time, Steve dusted his hands and sat back on his heels.
Well,
he signalled for the sergeant and Bub to rejoin them. I had a chat with the pilot yesterday and no real surprises here today. Dehydration, I'd say. We'll have to send him up to St. Helens for an autopsy to be sure. Youngish, healthy guy, unexpected death, I want to take a look. But he's showing all the signs. Steve looked up. What was he doing out here?
We're not sure, Nathan said.
Sergeant Ludlow was flipping through a notebook.
So,
he looked at Bub. You and he were supposed to meet on Wednesday, is that right?
Yeah.
The sergeant waited, his sunburn turning a deeper shade of red as Bub stared back. Could you tell me about that? Bub looked a little surprised, but haltingly and with plenty of prompting, recounted the same story he'd told Nathan earlier. It was disjointed in the retelling, and even Nathan found himself frowning in confusion in places. Sergeant Ludlow scribbled furiously long after Bub had finished, then flipped back a page, his eyes moving across the words.
Why were you late?
He spoke lightly, as though the thought had just occurred to him, but Nathan felt sure the question had been brewing for minutes. He looked at the cop with his burned skin and wide eyes and suddenly wondered if he'd misjudged him.
What?
Bub blinked. Why were you late to meet your brother as arranged at Lehman's Hill?
Oh, I got two flats.
Tyres?
Yeah. Two flat tyres.
Yeah. It's pretty unlucky. The sergeant was smiling, but there was something new in his tone. It happens, Nathan said quickly, and he was relieved to see Steve nodding in agreement. It's not unusual with the heat and the rocks. You wreck one tyre, quite often you wreck two, and it'll take you 45 minutes to change a flat this time of year, an hour even. He could feel himself rambling and stopped. Sergeant Ludlow was still looking at Bub. That's what happened? To Nathan's relief, Bub kept his mouth shut and nodded. The sergeant regarded him over his notebook, then scratched a few words. His expression was open, but again Nathan had the sensation of something lurking beneath. Nathan flicked his eyes towards Bub's car. The front two tyres did look newer. He caught Xander doing the same thing, and they both immediately looked away. The sergeant at last turned his attention from Bub to Steve. Do you have any thoughts on time of death?
Probably sometime yesterday morning, I guess.
Given the temperature and the lack of shade or water, I'd be very surprised if he lasted beyond 24 hours. The autopsy should tell us more. Doesn't sound like long. Sergeant Ludlow frowned. What was he, late 30s?
40,
Nathan said. He did better than some would have, Steve said. 24 hours might even be a bit optimistic. How far are we from Cameron's home? Ludlow looked at the brothers again.
On foot, it's about 15 kilometres in a straight line northwest, Nathan said.
Driving from here, you have to follow the dirt track west, then north if you don't want to get sandbogged. So that route's probably over 30. Safest way is another 10 kilometres on top of that. East from here to the rocks, then north along the road.
The rocks and road where they had found Cam's car.
Nathan exchanged a glance with Bub, and Ludlow caught it.
So even the shortest distance, you're looking at a few hours' walk home?
Ludlow said.
You can't walk it, not in this weather.
Steve said, his voice muffled. He was looking under the tarp again. That's what went wrong with those three contractors sandbogged out at Atherton a few years ago. You remember, Bub? You were on that search, weren't you?
Bub nodded.
They were, what, mid-20s? Steve said. Tried to walk back. Got about 7 kilometres, if that. Two were dead within 6 hours. What else is round here?
Ludlow walked to the fence and rested his hands on the wire.
That's your land on the other side, he said to Nathan.
Yeah.
Could your brother have been hoping to find you?
Nathan saw Bub and Steve both look over.
No.
You sound sure.
I am.
But... Ludlow opened his notebook again. Cameron knew you and your son were out doing a fence check.
Yeah, I always do this time of year, but we weren't around here.
Did Cameron know that for certain?
There was a long silence.
No.
Ludlow ran a hand along the top wire, then opened his palm and looked at the dust. Can you think of a reason why your brother might have needed to come to this spot?
I don't know why he would have needed to, Nathan said finally, but he knew it well.
Was he out here often?
I don't think so anymore. Nathan glanced at Bub, who shrugged.
But he used to.
This is also the only bit of shade for miles, Steve said. Might have been instinct to seek it out.
Sergeant Ludlow contemplated that as he looked at the shape on the ground. Even beneath the tarp, it was unmistakably human. How was your brother's state of mind these past few weeks? The question was delivered gently, and it took Nathan a moment to realise it was aimed at him.
I don't know. I hadn't seen him in a few months.
How many?
4, maybe.
When we were all doing that track work, Bub?
It had been the last time Nathan had seen either of his brothers, he realised now. Bub looked blank.
4 months, Ludlow said.
So, August, September time?
Probably a bit earlier,
Nathan tried to think.
Actually, wait. It was round the first State of Origin match, because we talked about that.
June,
Ludlow and Bub said in unison.
Yeah, I suppose.
So 6 months,
Ludlow said.
Yeah, it must be then. We spoke on the radio sometimes.
Often?
Often enough.
Was there a reason you hadn't seen each other?
No. No reason. I live nearly 3 hours away door to door. We're all busy.
He turned to Bub for help and was rewarded with nothing.
You see him every day at home. What do you think?
Nathan expected a shrug. But instead, Bub seemed to be thinking. Finally, he took a breath.
Cam was a bit wound up lately.
Nathan stared at him in astonishment. How bad had things been if even Bub had noticed?
Wound up in what way?
Ludlow asked. Bub did shrug this time. He looked a little edgy.
Dunno, the usual way?
They all waited, but he apparently had nothing further to add on the subject.
Ludlow checked his notes. Cameron lived on this property with who else?
Me, Bub said, counting on his fingers. Mum, Ilsa, that's Cam's missus, and their two girls, Uncle Harry.
Harry Bledsoe, Nathan cut in. He's not actually our uncle, he's a family friend.
He's worked on the property since before we were all born.
So technically an employee? Ludlow asked.
Technically, but no one thinks of him like that, Nathan said.
Bub nodded. We've got a couple of backpackers at the moment too.
Doing what? Ludlow said.
Usual, labouring, work around the house, whatever. Cam hired him a few months ago.
Would he hire in people often?
Whenever he needed, Nathan said.
There'd be contractors and labourers coming and going during the year depending on what's going on.
Glenn, Sergeant McKenna, he knows all this.
Ludlow just wrote something in his notebook. Steve stood up and dusted his knees.
All right. I'd like to get him into the ambulance now. The sergeant and I can manage the stretcher unless either of you particularly wants to help.
Nathan and Bub both shook their heads. Nathan was relieved. He suspected he would have felt the weight of that bundle for the rest of his life. Steve crouched down again.
I'm going to completely remove the tarp now if you want to look somewhere else.
Nathan started to say something to Xander, but the kid was already turning away. City softness, he thought, but was glad. Bub's eyes were fixed on the horizon. Nathan debated too long, and the decision was made for him. The tarp slipped loose as Cameron's limp form was lifted onto the stretcher. Bub had been right. Their brother didn't look injured, at least not in the traditional sense, but heat and thirst did terrible things to a person. He had started to remove his clothes as logic had deserted him, and his skin was cracked. Whatever had been going through Cameron's mind when he was alive, he didn't look peaceful in death. Nathan was still staring at the stretcher long after it had been placed in the ambulance. Sergeant Ludlow turned back to the grave, unconsciously dusting his hands on the side of his trousers. He suddenly stopped mid-motion, then took a step forward, studying the space where Cameron had lain. The exposed earth was sandy and studded with poor tufts of grass. The sergeant bent closer.
What is this?
Nathan felt Bub come up behind him on one side and Xander on the other. They all looked to where Ludlow was pointing. Near the base of the headstone, where Cameron's back had pressed against the ground, was a shallow hole. Chapter 4. The hole was about the size of three fists, and it was empty. Ludlow took a string of photos, then Nathan watched as he put a single gloved finger into the gap. The side immediately began to collapse as the soft ground trickled in. The land behaved like a living thing, and Nathan knew that in a day or two the area would have repaired itself seamlessly. Ludlow scrabbled deeper into the space, and Nathan wondered vaguely how far down the stockman had actually been buried.
I can't see anything in there.
Ludlow wiped his palms on his trousers and frowned up at Steve. Have you checked his hands? Steve disappeared around the back of the ambulance, re-emerging a minute later. Nails are broken and there's some sand and grit clogged underneath. He could have dug it by hand if that's what you're asking.
Why would he waste energy doing that?
Because his bloody brain was fried, wasn't it?
They all turned at Bub's voice. He was watching with his shoulders hunched and his arms folded across his chest.
What?
He gave a shrug.
It's obvious, isn't it? It was 45 degrees yesterday. I don't know why Cam left his car, but the minute he did that, he was fucked. End of story.
Ludlow looked at Steve, who gave a tight nod.
Look, he's not wrong.
Dehydration leads to confusion very quickly. They all stared into the scrabbled hole for a long time. Ludlow was the first to look up. I'd like to see his car now. Nathan offered to drive the sergeant, and Bub didn't argue. He looked relieved to be staying behind with Steve, who wanted to draw samples and get them in the cool box before they were completely worthless. Nathan climbed through the fence with Ludlow and Xander, and they got into his Land Cruiser. It felt better for once being back on his own side of the fence. The unnatural sight of Cameron laid out on the land he loved had upset the balance of the place somehow, as though there was a pollutant in the air. Nathan's hands were not quite steady on the steering wheel, as he tried to remember that last time he'd seen Cam back in June or whenever. Cam had probably been smiling, because he usually was. Nathan flexed his hands one at a time. He could only picture the face under the tarp,
He was already wishing he'd looked away. As he started the car and pulled away from the grave, he realised Ludlow was saying something.
Sorry?
I was asking if you and your brother deliberately bought land next to each other.
Oh. No, Burley Down Station was our dad, so me, Cam and Bub grew up there. Then I got given some land on this side of the fence when I was married.
In the rearview mirror, he could see Xander was looking out of the window, pretending not to listen.
That was about 20 years ago. Our dad died around then, and eventually Cam took over Burley Downs.
So Cameron owned it.
He runs it, and he has a majority stake now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but you don't have to look so interested. It's been like that for years. We all got a third when Dad died, so it was nice and fair. I sold half of mine to Cam pretty soon afterwards, and he manages the place. Organises all the daily running and does most of the long-term planning. Bob has a third, and I've still got a sixth.
Ludlow made a note.
And how big is Burley Downs?
3,500 square kilometres with about 3,000 Herefords.
And the family looks after all that themselves?
Something felt very strange about the way Ludlow was speaking.
It was only when Nathan opened his mouth to reply that it hit him. The man was speaking to him completely normally. Nothing overt or implied or threatening or very occasionally concerned.
Nathan wondered how soon Steve would fill him in.
Probably in the ambulance on the drive back to town. The story was decent small talk filler and wasn't like it was confidential. If anything, it was entrenched in local law now, from what Nathan could tell. Ludlow shifted in his seat, and Nathan realised he was still waiting for a reply. They hire in help when they need it. Like I said, mustering, you always need it. But they're a contract firm so you can call up and book the teams. It's pretty much all done by helicopter and motorbike now. Cam would get in contractors when he needed help with engineering stuff or laying fences or whatever, but day-to-day stuff is mostly the family, especially when it's quiet, like there's nothing happening now because the markets and meat plants are all closed for Christmas.
You don't need help milking all those cows?
In the mirror, Nathan saw Xander bite back a smile. It's beef round here, not dairy.
So, what, your fridges are full of steak?
And long-life milk. But no, it's not the same as with cattle on farms. Properties this size the cattle mostly wander. Drink from the boars, graze, get rounded up when it's their time.
They were almost wild in a lot of ways. Some of them barely saw a human from birth to slaughter.
And how big's your place?
About 700 square kilometres.
Fair bit smaller than Burley Downs.
Yep.
Why is that?
Nathan hesitated.
Xander had gone back to staring out of the window.
Long story. Messy divorce is the short version.
Ludlow seemed to accept that without question for once. And Nathan wondered if there was a similar explanation for the cop finding himself stationed 1,500 kilometres from Brisbane.
Who else lives at your place? Ludlow said.
Nathan didn't answer straight away.
No one else full time. I'm there on my own.
Ludlow turned his head and stared.
Just you?
Yep.
One-man show. I mean, contractors and people when I need them.
And could afford them.
The sergeant was openly gaping.
And your place was, what, 700 square kilometres? And how many cattle?
Probably 500 or 600.
Christ, that still sounds like a lot.
Nathan didn't reply immediately.
It was and it wasn't.
It was enough to overwork his crappy strip of land until it became a sandpit. It wasn't enough to help him break anything like even. But,
Ludlow scanned the extensive horizon all the way from one empty side to the other.
Don't you get lonely?
No.
Another quick glance in the mirror. Xander was watching now.
No, I'm good.
I don't mind it.
And as long as there's enough water, the cattle pretty much look after themselves.
Not completely, though.
No, not completely, but we've been lucky with the Grenville the last couple of years, Nathan said, keen to change the subject.
What's that, the river?
Yeah.
Picks up all the nutrients from the rainwater so it's good for the ground when it floods. Flooded last year. Then a couple of years before that. Ludlow squinted at the sun. How much rain does that take?
Floods around here without rain,
Xander said from the back seat. And Ludlow twisted round.
Really?
Nathan nodded. It was a strange sight, even after 42 years, to watch the water rise silent and stealthy under a cloudless blue sky. The river would lap at its banks, swollen with rain that had fallen days before and 1,000 kilometres north. He pointed outside. When it floods, most of this is underwater. The river gets 10 kilometres wide in places. You can't get over without a boat. The houses in the town are all built on high ground, but the road disappears. Ludlow looked amazed. How do you get out? Nathan heard Xander laugh. You don't. A lot of properties become islands. I was stuck out at my place for 5 weeks once.
Alone?
Yeah, Nathan said. It's all right, though. You just have to be prepared. No choice. It's the geography. He looked out at the red earth stretching around them. It was hard to imagine, but millions of years ago, this had been the bottom of a massive inland sea. Aquatic dinosaur bones had been dug up under this soil, and there were still places in the desert where mounds of fossilized seashells baked under the sun. Nathan suddenly remembered how he and Cameron used to go dinosaur hunting when they were young, shovels in hand and bags ready to bring home the bones. Years later, it had been Xander's turn, and Nathan's pockets had bulged with plastic dinosaurs to bury when the real ones inevitably didn't come out to play. The sergeant was writing in his notebook again. Who are the neighbours? He said. Nearest property is Atherton. Nathan pointed northeast. The town's south of that, then you've got another couple of properties east of there. The second biggest one around here is Kirribee Station, and that shares a border with me. It's owned by a company now. It had previously been family-owned, though, specifically by Nathan's father-in-law, ex-father-in-law, Nathan reminded himself, because he preferred the sound of it. He put his foot on the brake as they approached a spot in the fence line where he could pass. Xander jumped out and opened the gate, and they bumped through and were once again on Cameron's land. Not far now, he said to Ludlow. What were you saying earlier about your brother knowing the grave area well? The sergeant looked over. Seems like a strange place to want to spend any time. Uncle Cam painted a picture of it, Xander said, climbing back in. He made it famous for around here anyway.
Oh, yeah?
Nathan nodded. He's only an amateur, was an amateur, but he was pretty good. He kind of got into painting when we were kids. It wasn't a lot to do for fun. So we did all this weird old lady stuff. Stamp collecting and things. I couldn't paint for shit, but Cam was all right. He kept doing it on and off, I think. But he did this picture of the Stockman's grave about 5 years ago. One of the seasonal workers at the time had taken a photo of it and put it online when she'd got home to France or Canada or wherever she was from. Cameron had suddenly got calls from people trying to order prints. Eventually, at the suggestion of his mother, he'd entered the painting in a competition and won a statewide prize. You can buy postcards of it at the shop in town, Nathan said. So the grave meant a lot to your brother, Ludlow said, in a voice that suggested he found that significant. I wouldn't say that exactly, Nathan said. I think he liked the painting more than the place. He just got lucky one day with the way the light fell. It's quite strange out there, Ludlow said. A grave on its own in the middle of nowhere. Never seen that before.
There are a few around here,
Xander leaned forward. From the old days when a person died suddenly, they'd get buried on site, and later the family or someone might come along and put a headstone up. There are maps and photos and things online for the tourists. Who would come all the way out here for that? Nathan shrugged.
You'd be surprised.
They visit the Stockman?
Sometimes.
Used to get a few a year when Cam's picture was big. Not many now. There's a more popular one past Atherton. What's the draw with that one?
Sadder, I think. It's a kid. Little boy. 1900s.
Ludlow looked unsettled, and Nathan wondered if he had children. What happened to him?
Usual story out here,
Nathan made himself keep his voice even. Wandered the wrong way and got lost. Out on the road, Nathan overshot the break in the rocks on the first attempt. He swore and reversed, then threaded his four-wheel drive through the hidden gap in the outcrop. On the other side, he looked around in bewilderment. Cameron's car was nowhere in sight. For a bizarre moment, he thought the car was actually gone. Xander tapped the dusty window. "We've gone too far," he said, pointing behind them. Nathan returned to the road and tried again. The correct track was almost identical. He parked in the same spot as Bub had earlier, and they all walked up the slope. At the top, he and Xander hung back while Ludlow put on his gloves. He circled Cameron's car, taking even more photographs. He paused at the open driver's door. Nathan cleared his throat. "The door was open like that, but the keys were on the seat when we arrived. I tried the engine." "You shouldn't have touched anything." "Sorry." "And what happened when you tried it?" "It worked." Ludlow climbed in and turned the key for himself. He let the engine roar for a few seconds, then switched it off. "Was the car generally reliable?" he asked. "It's a pretty old model." 18 years old, Nathan knew. Around the same age as his own. "The older ones work better out here. New models all have electronic displays and things that can't cope with the dust. Gets in the cracks and stuffs the whole system." Cam looked after this one well. "What about the radio?" Ludlow pointed to the cradle on the dashboard. Nathan showed him how to work through the frequencies. "Sounds okay to me. His EPIRB's probably under the passenger seat as well." Ludlow reached down and pulled out the personal distress beacon. It was still in its box and had not been activated. "You don't use handheld radios?" he said. "Nah, they're all connected to the cars." "So if you leave your vehicle, you're without comms?" "Yeah." "What's the range?" "Depends. You can get 20 kilometres straight, further with the repeater mast, but there are black spots," Nathan said. "It's line of sight, basically." The sergeant continued working his way through the car, running his gloved hands over the interior. He checked behind the visors, in the glove box, under the seats, then checked again. "I think his wallet's missing." Ludlow raised his head. "Wasn't in his pockets either." "Nah, it'll be at home." "He wouldn't carry it?" Nathan, whose own wallet was on his kitchen table in his unlocked house a couple of 100 kilometres away, waved a hand at their surroundings. "Why bother?" A hint of embarrassment flitted across Ludlow's face. He opened a repair manual and flicked through the pages. "What are you looking for?" Nathan asked eventually. Ludlow hesitated. "Anything." "He doesn't know," Nathan thought. "He has no idea what to make of any of this." He saw Xander frown, probably thinking the same thing. "Are you going to dust for fingerprints or something?" Xander said. "The criminal investigation branch would need to fly out for that." "And will they fly out?" "Only if there are signs of violence." They all turned their eyes to the car. The windows were not cracked. The seats had seen nothing worse than general grime, and the mirrors were positioned at the correct angles. Ludlow looked back at Xander. "I'm sorry." He worked on methodically, stopping short only when he opened the rear doors. He stood, as they had, staring at the water and food stacked neatly in front of him. "He left all this?" Nathan didn't have an answer. "That's supposed to be your job to work out," he thought. Ludlow looked over. "Is there any practical explanation you can think of?"
"I've heard of people..."
Nathan sounded desperate even to his own ears. "Sometimes people leave their vehicle for some reason, chase down a stray calf or something and go further than they meant to. They start running and they don't realise how far they've gone and suddenly they're disoriented." Ludlow peeled off his gloves. "Do you think that's what might have happened?"
"No. I don't know, I'm just saying, but I don't think Cam would have got lost around here."
"Right," Ludlow said. "The car looks in good shape to me.
But let's say there was something wrong with it. The breakdown advice is to stay with your vehicle, isn't it? Golden rule, I was told.
Yeah.
The sergeant caught the note in Nathan's voice and looked up. Definitely more switched on than he'd seemed at first, Nathan thought.
Yeah, but what? Ludlow said.
Nothing, just you use your common sense as well, and Cam knew that. I mean, it's a bloody road right there. He had plenty of water. If the car wasn't working and he had to walk anywhere, it would have been to the road, no question. And he would have taken water.
So why?
I don't know why.
Nathan could hear his voice rising.
I'm just saying that's what he would have done. But first choice by an absolute bloody mile, he would have stayed with the car and kept the aircon running and got on the radio for help. And if he absolutely had to leave it, he would have walked to the road, not the middle of nowhere.
That's what Cameron would have done, Ludlow said.
Yeah, if he'd wanted to be found.
Ludlow's words hung in the air.
Yeah, obviously, mate. Nathan bristled. Look, I hear what you're getting at. You can come out and say it.
To his credit, the cop just gave a small nod of assent.
I'm just thinking about what your other brother said about Cameron perhaps feeling under pressure.
He had access to guns.
Cameron did?
Yeah, rifle cabinet at home, same as everyone.
There's no weapon in the car.
No, well, he didn't carry one around all the time. But at home, he wouldn't have had any trouble, you know, if he'd wanted to put his hands on one.
So you think...
I don't think anything, I'm just saying, if that's what you're thinking, why wouldn't he...
Nathan stopped short. He didn't say it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Ludlow nodded. But you would have seen what the damage from a gunshot looks like.
Of course, on animals, he added. Your brother would be familiar with that too.
So?
Ludlow's expression made his face look strangely older.
So, maybe nothing, but sometimes people make the mistake of thinking a gun offers an easy way out, and it doesn't. Mentally, it's a huge hurdle, an impossible step for some people.
Sometimes, Ludlow stopped and frowned. He turned his head slowly, taking in the view on all sides. The land was enormous in every direction.
Is this one of the highest points around here?
This outcrop is the highest point around here, Nathan said. They used to call it the lookout, not entirely as a joke.
Sometimes what?
Ludlow didn't answer as he took a few steps to the rocky edge. He leaned over. Nathan didn't need to follow him. He knew what was down there.
Sometimes what, mate? He repeated. What were you going to say?
Just that sometimes people simply need a way out. And the direct approach isn't for everybody. Nathan took a few steps and joined him on the edge of the lookout. He could feel Xander watching him.
Below was a 5-meter drop onto a pillow of sand.
You'd be lucky to break your ankle, let alone your neck, he knew. It was nowhere near high enough to offer a desperate man a certain escape. The other direction, though.
Nathan turned and looked past his son, to the west.
As far as he could see, the land stretched out deep and open, all the way to the desert. A perfect sea of nothingness. If someone was looking for oblivion, that was the place to find it.
Chapter 5. Nathan gripped the steering wheel. In the passenger seat, Xander sat with his arms crossed and his shoulders hunched. They both stared at the road ahead. They hadn't spoken in 20 minutes, and it suddenly hit Nathan that his son was on the verge of tears. He was holding them back as hard as only teenage boys can, pale and tight-faced with the effort of shoring up the dam. But the grief was lapping at the edges. Xander had always looked up to Cameron, Nathan knew. And as he sat there, fully alive himself, he felt a brief stab of envy for his brother under a tarp. Before they'd left Cameron's Land Cruiser, Ludlow had produced a roll of crime scene tape from his bag and looked for a way to surround the vehicle. There were no trees or even any sticks he could use as stakes in the ground. In the end, he'd cut strips of tape and tied them to the door handles. "I don't think you need to be too worried, mate," Nathan had said. But Ludlow had still locked the driver's door and handed the keys to Nathan. "You okay holding on to these? Your own sergeant wants to see all this tomorrow." Nathan had put the keys in his pocket where he could still feel them now as he drove. They pressed heavy and uncomfortable against his hip. He and Xander had driven the sergeant back to the gravesite in silence, where Steve had thankfully finished his immediate duties. The rear door of the ambulance was shut now, and Nathan was glad Cameron was no longer in sight. Steve had eyeballed them. "Are you blokes all right to drive home?" Nathan realised they all looked terrible, but they'd nodded anyway. "Maybe we should camp," he'd suggested half-heartedly as the ambulance drove away. "Save driving out here again tomorrow." "No way, I had enough last night, thanks." Bub was already halfway into the driver's seat. "You both coming back to ours?" Nathan nodded. "Yeah, we will. Mum's expecting us tomorrow anyway. For Christmas on Thursday?" he added when Bub looked surprised. "Oh, yeah, righto." Bub started his engine. "See you at home then." "Which way do you want to go?" "Road," Bub said. "Back route will take longer if we get bogged. Don't know about you, but I can't be asked digging my way out today." He slammed his door. Nathan could see Bub's car a short way ahead on the road now. The dust billowing from under his wheels stopped for a few hundred metres as the unpaved road suddenly switched to seamless bitumen, well-maintained and clearly marked with white paint. An emergency landing strip for the flying doctor. The smoothness lasted barely a minute before they were jolted back onto gravel. Xander leaned forward in the passenger seat. In the distance was a rare flicker of movement. A car was approaching, still too far away to see properly. "All the Christmas presents are still at your place," Xander said, sitting back heavily. "Shit. Sorry, I thought we'd be going home before heading to Grandma's." Nathan had planned to get back to his own house today, where they could scrub a week's worth of dust from themselves and their clothes ahead of the family Christmas reunion. "Doesn't matter," Xander said. "No one will care after this." No, Nathan thought, but he was annoyed with himself. He'd wanted to make this Christmas a good one for Xander, even if that was already turning into a pretty big ask. The approaching car was still small but growing more visible ahead. Nathan recognised it as belonging to a long-term jackaroo from Atherton. The guy must be heading into town. There was nowhere else to go. The car grew closer, slowly. Felt like it took an age. There was time to consider the slight bend in the guy's bull bar and the scraped paintwork on the hood. The jackaroo reduced his speed a touch as he drew level with Bub, raising his hand in a wave. The greeting froze mid-air when he clocked Nathan driving behind. Nathan couldn't make out the man's eyes behind the windscreen, but he could see the swivel of his wrist. Firmly and deliberately, the wave turned into the finger. It was nothing less than Nathan had expected from the first sight of the dust in the distance. He stole a glance sideways. Xander was staring out of the passenger seat window, pretending, as always, not to have noticed. Nathan sometimes thought he could see his childhood homestead appear 1,000 times and 1,000